2. The Burgundy Falcon 2000 EX left Heathrow at just after 6 in the morning, arriving in Geneva around 9:30 Swiss time. The jet aircraft cruised at Mach 0.8 with a 4,650-mile range. It cost $24 million. Winston Spencer was its sole occupant. After arriving at Geneva International Airport in Quang Trinh, Spencer was met by a chauffeured Rolls-Royce that delivered him to the hotel. There, he was immediately taken to a suite without having to register. Once in his room, Spencer took a few minutes to freshen up. Standing in front of the beveled edge mirror, he stared at his image. Spencer's nose was long and patrician, his eyes pale blue and distant, and his skin in need of a tan. Neither his cheeks nor his chin were very defined. Truth be told, his image always appeared to be slightly out of focus, as if lacking character. His was not the face of a man others would follow. It was the face of a high-priced minion. When he finished his examination, he placed his expensive cologne back in a Burberry toiletry bag, then left the room to get a mid-morning meal. The art auction he was in Geneva for was due to start soon. "Will Mr. Spencer require anything else?" the waiter asked. Spencer stared for a moment at the remains of his meal and said, "No, I think that will be all." The waiter nodded, removed the plates, then took a brush from his apron and whisked up the few crumbs on the table. Then he silently retreated. No bill was presented. No money changed hands. The cost of the breakfast and the gratuity would appear on the room charge, which Spencer would never see. In the far corner of the dining room, Michael Talbot stared toward Spencer. Talbot, an art dealer from San Francisco, had crossed paths with Spencer before. Three times in the last year, the stodgy Britisher had outbid Talbot's clients, for Spencer's own clients seemed to have unlimited resources. Talbot could only hope today would be different. Spencer was dressed in a gray suit over a sweater vest, a blue polka-dot bow tie around his neck. His black lace-up leather shoes were highly polished, as were his fingernails, and his neatly styled short hair was flecked with gray, as befitted his age, which Talbot estimated at close to 60 years. Once, when Talbot had been in London on business, he'd tried to visit Spencer's shop. There was no telephone number available. The small stone building had had no name outside, and aside from an unobtrusive video camera above the buzzer, it could have been suspended in time from 100 years before. Talbot had pushed the buzzer twice, but no one had answered. Spencer sensed Talbot staring his way, but only glanced at him out of the corner of his eye. Of the other 7 men Spencer had determined had an interest in the artifact he'd come to purchase, the American would probably bid the highest. Talbot's buyer was a Silicon Valley software billionaire with a penchant for Asian art and argumentation. The billionaire's belligerency could only help Spencer. The man's ego might take him beyond his set price, but as the competition stiffened, he traditionally became angry and dropped out. The new rich are so predictable, Spencer thought. He rose to return to his room. The auction was not until 1 p.m.
"Lot 37," the auctioneer said with reverence. "The Golden Buddha."
A large mahogany crate was wheeled onto the podium, and the auctioneer reached for the clasp holding the door closed. The audience of bidders was small. This was a highly secret auction, and the invitations had only gone out to the select few who could afford to pay for art masterworks with somewhat shady histories. Spencer had yet to bid on anything. Lot 21, a Degas bronze that he knew had been stolen out of a museum 12 years ago, had appealed to him, but the bidding had gone higher than his South American client had authorized him to pay. More and more, Spencer was weaning himself away from clients on a budget, even if the stock price ran into the millions. The auction today was the first step in his plan for retirement. The auctioneer opened the door to the crate at the same time that Spencer pushed a button on the miniaturized satellite telephone in his vest pocket. He spoke into the tiny microphone clasped to his lapel.
"Please tell your employer they have the object on display," he said to an aide thousands of miles away.
"He asks if it is everything you'd hoped,"
the aide asked. Spencer stared at the massive gold statue as a hush fell over the crowd.
"Everything and more," Spencer said quietly.
A few seconds passed as the aide relayed the information. He said,
"At all costs."
"It will be an honor," Spencer said as he thought back on the history.
The Golden Buddha dated from 1288 when the rulers of what would later become Vietnam commissioned the work to celebrate their victory over the forces of Kublai Khan. 596 pounds of solid gold, mined in Laos, had been formed into a 6-foot likeness of the Enlightened One. Chunks of jade from Siam had formed the eyes, while a ring of Burmese rubies wound around the neck. Buddha's pot belly had been outlined in sapphires from Thailand, and his belly button was a large, rounded opal that glowed iridescently. The icon had been given as a gift to the first Dalai Lama in the year 1372. For 587 years, the Golden Buddha had remained in a monastery in Tibet and then accompanied the Dalai Lama into exile. While being transported with the Dalai Lama on a trip to the United States for display, however, it had disappeared from the airport in Manila. President Ferdinand Marcos had always been the prime suspect. Since then, the ownership had always remained cloudy, until suddenly it had mysteriously reappeared for the auction. The seller's identity would remain an enigma. While it was almost impossible to place a value on such a rare artifact, that was exactly what was about to happen. The pre-auction estimates had conservatively placed the value at between $100 million and $120 million.
"We will start the bidding at $50 million U.S. dollars," the auctioneer said.
A low starting point, Spencer thought. The gold alone was worth twice that. It was the history, not the beauty, that made it a priceless piece of art. "Must be the weak world economic climate," Spencer concluded.
"We have $50 million," the auctioneer said. "Now 60?
Talbot raised his paddle as the bid hit 80.
80, now 90,
the auctioneer said in a monotone. Spencer glanced across the room at Talbot. Typical American, ear on a satellite telephone, paddle in his hand, as if he were worried the auctioneer would miss his signal.
90, now 100,
the auctioneer droned. The 100 bid was from a South African dealer Spencer knew. The dealer's patron had made his fortune in diamonds. Spencer admired the woman. They'd shared a glass of sherry more than once, but he also knew her patron's habits. When the value exceeded what he felt he could sell it for later, he'd drop out. The man loved art, but he only bought at his price and if he could someday make a profit. $110 million came from the rear of the room. Spencer turned to stare at the bidder. The man's age was hard to determine, but if Spencer had to hazard a guess, he'd pick the low side of 60, based primarily on the bidder's flowing gray hair and beard. Two things were odd, though. Spencer knew practically everyone in the room, at least by sight or reputation, but this man was an unknown. And he seemed totally unconcerned, as if he were bidding on a weekend trip to a spa at a local charity auction, instead of tendering a bid in the amount of a small country's yearly budget. The man was obviously qualified. The auction company would have made sure of that. But who was he?
120 from a German pharmaceutical magnate. 120? Now 130?
Talbot again, waving his paddle like a landing semaphore. The bidding began to stall at 140 million, bid again by the gray-haired man. Spencer turned again and felt a touch of apprehension. The man was staring directly into his eyes. Then the man winked. A chill ran down Spencer's spine. He turned to the side where he could see Talbot talking animatedly into his telephone. He could sense then that the Silicon Valley billionaire was flagging.
"Tell him," Spencer whispered into his phone. "It slowed at 150, with maybe one more bid still forthcoming."
"He wants to know if you've bid yet."
"No," Spencer said, "but they know I'm here."
Spencer had bought from the auctioneer many times. The man had been watching him like a hawk. Any smile, flinch, or gesture of his would be taken as a bid.
"He asks that you bid 200.
the aide relayed.
And blow them out.
Acknowledged, Spencer said. Then, in almost slow motion, he placed two spread-apart fingers to his lips.
The bid is 200 million,
the auctioneer said emotionlessly. A raise of 50 million when the auctioneer was begging for 10.
I have 200 million in the room, the auctioneer said quietly. Anyone in for 210?
The room was as silent as a tomb. Spencer turned to the rear of the room. The gray-haired man had vanished.
200 going once, the auctioneer said. Going twice. Fair warning.
He paused again.
Sold. 200 million plus buyer's premium, a stunning buy it is.
The room, which had been silent, now rippled with contained applause. Spencer stayed another half hour to arrange the crating and security to the airport, and by 5 that night he was flying east for delivery. For security purposes, Spencer had chartered a plane that could not be traced to the Macau billionaire who was his client. The company was full service. It would both transport him to Asia as well as facilitate the delivery of the artifact to its new home by armored car. He was almost home free.